By the time I was five, I knew something of the blues, even if I wouldn't be able to sing them until much later in my life. I knew how Sissy felt poking holes in the dirt and missing something that you can't have, seized by a powerful fit of lonely, wanting to dig a hole in the ground so deep you can just crawl up inside and hide. By the time I was five, I could already imagine what it was like to stand on a railroad platform and feel envy, the thought of getting on board and heading out. My brother and I had something close to the blues. It seemed like to us there was always fussing and fighting in our house, so bad that when we were 5 and 6 years old, we made a plan together to pack up all of our things and head out on our own. So we made a sign that read, "Two kids free to a good home." And we were going to stand out in front of our house until we got an offer. But our neighbors turned us in, and our escape was foiled, so we kept our blues to ourselves. But by the time I was five, we were already Unitarian Universalist, which meant that we wouldn't be singing the blues. Not in church, anyway. It wasn't the Unitarian way. We did a lot of Bach and Brahms in my home church, good music for our great pipe organ. But like Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata, it didn't really seem to fit my life. I never doubted that Unitarian Universalists understood the blues, or that we didn't have heartbreaks of our own to deal with. It just seemed like we had a different way of dealing with our heartbreak. We didn't try to sing the blues so much as we tried to outthink the blues. And as a Unitarian Universalist, I was raised to be a very good thinker. And thinking helped me to manufacture some elaborate escape routes in my mind. But every time I returned home from my mental excursion out of my body, I would discover that I still hadn't managed to free myself from all of those feelings of sadness and despair and loneliness. I discovered what they mean when they say the most unfree souls always spend their whole lives escaping. Later, I discovered that the dilemma of trying to outthink the blues is not a new one. In the 5th century BCE, the newly restored Athenian democracy in Greece put Socrates to death. Socrates was Plato's hero, and Plato despaired about this, and the harsh world of imperfect feelings, and he chose instead to deal more with a world of perfect logic and reason. He didn't get sad or morose. He didn't get the blues. He simply escaped out of a physical world of pain and uncertainty and into a cerebral world of thoughts and ideas. A few years ago, UU colleague, the Reverend Linda Hansen, asked an interesting question in the UU World, our denominational magazine, and she asked, "Unitarian Universalists are sometimes dismissive of those who seek refuge in a world beyond this one. But wouldn't it be more honest to admit that we too do this? That there is something of a Plato in each of us, a desire to transcend our worries and our sadness and our grief and insulate ourselves from the pain of relationships by retreating into our minds?" Put another way, the question we face as Unitarian Universalists is the question of where to find hope. Is it found in transcending this world or in touching the very heart of it? Is hope found in thoughtful escape from pain or by being in relationship to it? Put a different way, Reverend Hansen might be asking whether we as UUs should use our intellect to escape the blues, Or should we just surrender and learn how to sing the blues instead? Which would be hard, because Unitarian Universalists, after all, are called God's frozen people. Which doesn't bode well if your highest value is freedom. Why would anyone who was really free spend so much time escaping just to avoid singing the blues? Because if you ask me, anyone, anywhere, who wants to be fully and fiercely human needs to learn how to sing the blues before they die. After all, everyone has some blues they could be singing, right? I grew up with the middle child in a divorced household blues, or the mother I always had died before she became the mother I always wanted blues. What is it for you? Have you got your own blues song? Maybe your blues comes from having recently let go of a good friend. Or maybe a good friend recently let go of you. Maybe your blues comes from having work get in the way of loving your children or living your dream. Maybe you've been waking up alone when for years you've been wanting to wake up next to somebody else. Or maybe you've been waking up next to somebody else when for years you wanted to be waking up alone. If you ask me, there isn't anybody who doesn't have the goods somewhere in their life to be singing some down-home, honest, hard-boiled blues now and again. And if you really looked at your whole life and you can't find anything worth singing the blues about, well, that's an even better reason to sing the blues. Because if that's the case, chances are you haven't learned to care about anything enough to give it the power to break your heart. And that's a surefire sign that you've been spending your life thinking too much. Or maybe you've had the blues and you just aren't sure how to sing the blues. Well, then maybe we should stop all of this heavy thinking and just take a quick look at what the blues really are and what they're not. The blues are something that you feel. They're not something that you intellectualize. You don't read ahead and make sure you agree with the words. The blues are something that come from the heart and run through your soul and grab hold of your body so that when you hear them, you've just got to do something. Even if all that means is snapping your fingers or tapping your toes. And if you really feel the blues, then you can just shake your head and moan. The blues at their best will have you laughing one minute and crying the next. The blues are a public call of a private pain, a call for others to participate in one's personal heartbreak. And from their origin, the blacks and the poor whites during the period of American Reconstruction, they were often called hollerbacks, which meant that when life was yelling or teasing or beating you down, you holler back. You talk directly back to life. And you tell it about the sorry, slipshod job that it's been doing at giving you what you need. That's the blues. And if you're listening to something and you can't tell if it's the blues, here's how you know. If the guitar is out of tune on purpose, it's probably the blues. If the singer sounds like he has an old car parked on his chest, it's probably the blues. If the first words you hear is, "I woke up this morning," it's probably the blues. If the song starts out saying, "I got a good woman," it's not the blues. Unless the next line is something nasty like, "I got a good woman with the meanest dog in town." That's the blues. And blues lyrics are not terribly intellectual. After you have the first line, you generally repeat it and then find something that rhymes, sort of. It may start, "Got a good woman with the meanest dog in town." And it ends with, "Got teeth like an alligator and mangy fur all around." And when that last line describes your woman and not the dog, that's the blues. And there are a few rules about the blues that everyone should know. If you're going to sing the blues about your car, it's better if it's a Chevy or a Cadillac. It's hard to sing the blues about a Prius. Other acceptable blues transportation include a Greyhound bus or a southbound train. Walking is always a popular thing with the blues. Catching a plane can be about the blues, but usually only if it's on fire. And where you choose to have the blues is important. You can't have the blues in an office park or a shopping mall. The lighting is all wrong. And other bad places include ashrams, gallery opens, or long weekends in the Hamptons. The blues is made for basements and back porches, unnamed highways and county jails, empty beds and empty houses make for the blues. It's always easier to sing the blues about being blind or having shot a man in Memphis or getting the news that you're going to die. It's much harder to sing the blues about how you were once blind but now you can see, about having stolen the last piece of pound cake, or getting the news that you're about to be taxed on the income from your trust fund. If you ask for water and your baby gives you gasoline, that's the blues. But don't try to sing the blues about any drink that has an umbrella in it, or bottled Perrier, or a Starbucks caramel frappuccino. That's not the blues. And when it comes to dying, if it occurs in a cheap motel or a shotgun shack, it's the blues. Stabbed in the back by a jealous lover is a blues way to die. So is the electric chair and substance abuse, or being denied treatment in an emergency room. If you die during a liposuction treatment, it's not the blues. Don't even try and go there. One of the important things to remember about any good blues song is that somewhere in it, the blues always has something to do with dying. Whether it be a friend or a lover, a dream or your dignity, something is lost that you thought you could never live without. And the pain is everywhere you turn. You can't outrun it, you can't outhide it, and you can't outthink it. You can't even crawl into a hole without it crawling in after you. The pain is there to stay until you learn how to face up to it and sing the blues. The great black writer, Ralph Ellison, understood this. Ellison, you might remember, was famous for writing the American classic, The Invisible Man. But what you may not know was that his book was not intended to be the late night horror movie that it turned into. It was really about how he felt as a black man in white America. It was commentary about color, his social standing, and the way that being black made him feel invisible in public. If someone used racial slurs, they weren't seeing who he really was. If they apologized after bumping into him, they did so in a sterile politeness without ever even looking him in the face. Feeling invisible was Ellison's blues, and he sang it in one of the most thoughtful books published in the last century. But in all that good thinking, Ellison realized he could never outthink his blues, not until he learned to share his ideas and his blues with other people. Ellison also happened to be a huge fan of the blues. In one of his essays, he put together one of the most cogent statements on the purpose of the blues. The blues, he said, is an impulse to keep the painful details of a brutal experience alive in one's aching consciousness, to finger one's jagged grain. The blues is an autobiographical chronicle of a personal catastrophe expressed lyrically. In other words, Ellison is saying to us that we need to keep the painful details of our past alive when we're not ready to let them go. And we can't let them go until we finger one's jagged grain, make smooth the rough edges of hard times with familiarity and compassion. That is the road to becoming free. Band-aids and tourniquets are not the answer, because it's not about ending or escaping the pain. It's about spending time tracing the sharpness of what has cut us and watching as some of our unrealized dreams bleed out. And then having enough faith to believe that there is still some dream deep inside worthy of holding on to. As much as we think we can do this by our own thoughts alone, we are wrong. When we have a physical wound, we let a doctor examine it so our body can heal. Singing the blues is a way that we let the world see our inner wounds so our soul can heal. But there's another reason as well that we sing the blues, and that is for the people listening. For the people and the world around us listening in the unconscious but collective hope that they may hear something that will start the healing within them. They will hear the sound of someone searching for healing and recognize that road to freedom that they're on. And we can never tell just how many people might be changed by hearing our blues, by hearing its call toward the quest for wholeness. People who have been years trying to escape by outthinking or avoiding the blues they felt. People who long ago crawled into a hole so deep, but watched as their blues just crawled right in alongside them. My own experience of finding my way out of the blues didn't come until I finally gave up outsmarting or escaping them. Till I gave up running from all the things that reminded me of my old blues. I had done this for years and had managed to live a pretty safe life, but a pretty invisible life too, because no one could see all the feelings that I had just kept stuffing deep inside. The day all of that became clear to me was one Sunday when I happened to be in church, going back to church after being away for many years. And we sang the hymn, Precious Lord, and I suddenly found myself spontaneously beginning to cry when I spent my whole life trying not to cry. Precious Lord, take my hand, lead me on, let me stand. I am tired, I am weak, I am worn. I may have found myself in a church that day, but that was the blues. And it was my blues, and people were helping me to sing them. And when they did, I realized that despite all of my sophisticated attempts, I had never managed to outrun or outthink my blues. I had only retarded their expression. And that's when it became clear to me I was a blues retard. And then the next lines came. Through the storm, through the night, lead me on to the light. Take my hand, precious Lord, lead me home. And I knew, feeling the way I felt as those lines came up out of me, I had to go back and deal with some old hurts that I'd been holding on to for a long time. Learn how to sing them. Learn until I knew their words. Learn until I could accompany those ideas with a throaty moan. And the singing that day helped me realize that I needed some help. I needed other people beside me who would listen, who would hold my hand, who would lead me home. Thomas Dorsey didn't know he would help me with my blues when he wrote that hymn. He wrote it in 1932 as a way to keep the painful details of his own brutal experience alive in his consciousness. It came several months after he reluctantly left his pregnant wife behind in Chicago to be the featured soloist for a revival in Chicago. Or left his wife in Chicago to be the featured revivalist in St. Louis. During an encore with a crowd going wild, a courier came on stage with a telegram which informed him that his wife had died in labor, giving birth to his son. The next day, he got another telegram telling him that his son died as well. Dorsey was devastated, and he railed at the unfairness, and he said that for a long time, he couldn't do anything. He couldn't play, he couldn't write, he couldn't eat, he couldn't sleep. All he wanted to do was to curl up and die, to crawl into a hole so deep and try to escape all of that pain. But a friend came to him and encouraged him to find a way back to what he loved and to have what he loved find a way back to him. And so he wrote this hymn, and in so doing he helped me and so many others find their way back as well. It works that way sometimes. One person getting in touch with their pain helps all of us find a way through ours. Isn't that what a church is really all about? A place where we can learn to deal with the pain that we've carried, that others have carried, that the world carries. The church needs to be in touch with the pain of the world, or it simply just isn't doing its job. And you can hardly get in touch with the pain of the world if you can't sing the blues at least a little every now and then. In fact, I believe that when we are really tired and weak and worn, singing the blues is the only thing we have that will lead us home to the glory of life.